the appellant in this case, and I want to jump right into some of the factual issues. I know that this is a topic that this court has addressed recently, probably more recently than any other appellate court in the state, so I know you're well familiar with the issues here. Let me just make a couple of factual statements there, and I'm going to talk about the Brown case to a great extent in a moment, but let me make a couple of factual statements that I think are important, because this case is in some sense the mirror image of the Brown case and the questions that the court didn't find necessary to directly deal with in Brown are present in this case. And what I mean by that is that as in Brown, as in most of the cases dealing with this issue, it comes up in the sense of a request for a jury instruction. Here we have a trial court finding that Ms. Spence did not engage in the voluntary act that caused her intoxication. And just to be clear about how that arose, this was a trial before the court, and then the trial judge didn't enter a guilty or not guilty verdict. He took it under advisement. And then they came back into court, and Mr. Evans presented a series of authorities to the trial judge making the argument that we're making here. Mr. Evans asked the trial court if the trial court accepted the defendant's version of what had occurred, and the trial court said yes, he did accept those facts. So what you have is factually the trial court making a finding that Ms. Spence did not voluntarily engage in the conduct that caused her intoxication.
Whoa. How do you get around point 2-0?
I'm sorry.
How do you get around?
Oh, okay. Your Honor, the issue is there's no question that Ms. Spence had alcohol in her system that blew a .20. The issue is whether or not she voluntarily ingested that. And the evidence showed that
we have somebody purportedly, speculation, putting chloral hydrate or something in a drink. All right?
Right.
How does that relate to the intoxilizer?
Your Honor, the issue is whether or not she voluntarily drank the alcohol that caused her to blow the .20. And the effect of the drug that we believe was dropped in her drink at the club rendered her incapable of resisting whatever was done to her that caused her to ingest the alcohol. And so the fact that she ingested the alcohol alone doesn't mean that she engaged in a voluntary act to ingest the alcohol. And that's the automatism defense that different courts have recognized and that this court discussed in Brown, which is if a person is doing something, is doing an act, not of their own free will, then they're not engaging in a voluntary act. And if somebody is rendered unconscious or incapable of resisting as a result of a drug involuntarily being ingested by them, that rises to the level of a non-voluntary act. In the Brown case in particular, and let me back up just in another response to your question, Justice McCoy. What you have here is the trial court accepting that and believing that as a factual matter, that's what occurred. And so that's one difference between this case and any of the other cases that I've ever seen addressing this issue. In all of the other cases, including Brown, you had situations where the trial court and then the appellate court following that came to the conclusion that it was not an involuntary act. And for instance, in Brown, the defendant testified that he had voluntarily, although mistakenly, had voluntarily taken Ambien, which caused him to do whatever he did, and then he wound up being intoxicated, but he voluntarily took the Ambien. Here we have a factual finding by the trial court that Ms. Spence did not she didn't voluntarily take the drug that was apparently slipped in her drink, and then she didn't voluntarily ingest the alcohol that caused her to be intoxicated. And with the factual finding by the trial judge, that's the facts that the court has that differentiate this case from Brown and the other cases dealing with this issue.
So under your theory of the case, then, you're complaining about the voluntariness of the ultimate intoxication by alcohol.
Right.
Plus, you're also complaining of the involuntariness of the driving.
Your Honor, the focus of our argument is the involuntariness of the alcohol.
Okay.
That's where we're arguing. And I think that the trial court was basically, I think, misled or led down an incorrect path by the state's argument, where the state did the same thing in their argument in front of the trial court that seems to happen in these cases over and over again, which is confusing the mental state requirement with the voluntary act requirement. Now, 4911 of the Penal Code says specifically that on DWIs there is no necessity for the state to prove a mental state under 6.02 of the Penal Code, but there's nothing about that that dispenses with the necessity for the state to prove a voluntary act under 6.01. And the state's argument to the trial court just conflated 601 and 602 and treated a voluntary act and a mental state as the same thing, which they clearly are not the same thing. And I think that, I mean, there's case law that we've cited in the brief that really make that clear. So what you have here is not an argument. Now, the state basically misconstrued the argument that the appellant was making. The appellant at the trial court was not arguing that the state didn't prove a mental state. The argument was the state didn't prove a voluntary act, and the failure to prove the voluntary act is what caused the evidence to be insufficient to support the conviction. There is some case law in this court. In the Brown case, this court cited the case law discussing the automatism question. And automatism, I think the case that probably discusses it in the most depth is the PV case from the Austin Court of Appeals, where they cite other cases and some treatises that essentially say that if you're being unconscious or semi-conscious at the time the acts occur and the acts are not part of your own free will, then you're not acting voluntarily. You're not engaging in a voluntary act. And so under that language, that's clearly what the trial court found had occurred in this case. And so
he didn't find that she was involuntarily driving.
I'm sorry, Judge.
He did not find that she was involuntarily driving while intoxicated.
And that's why we're not arguing involuntarily driving. That's why we're arguing, we're basing our argument on what the judge did find, which is that she involuntarily ingested the alcohol. He didn't, you're correct, he didn't find an involuntary driving. If she involuntarily ingested the alcohol, then she's not guilty. Now, procedurally, this case is unusual in that the judge found her guilty because of his misunderstanding of what the law was. And so, but you have the trial court's factual finding as to what the facts were, and what we ask this court to do is to take the trial court's factual finding and apply it to the law and find the evidence insufficient in this case. I know the state makes an argument in their brief about not treating comments from the trial court like comments on what the evidence showed in the way that we're arguing that they should be treated. An alternative to finding the evidence insufficient would be, in my view, to remand the case back to the trial court with instructions as to what the proper view of the law is, then let the trial court reenter his ruling however he sees fit under a proper interpretation of the law. I think it's important to look at Brown and look at this case and compare the factual differences, because the factual differences is really the crux. In Brown, when the court said that the automatism defense was not established regardless of whether or not any other issue was established, when this court said that wasn't established, the point you made was that defendant had voluntarily taken the Ambien. And then I believe there's the other case cited by the court, the Nelson case, which was another case by this court that was cited in Brown and referred to in Brown, the defendant in that case voluntarily took various drugs. And so you have on the one hand the cases where a defendant voluntarily takes drugs and then argues he's involuntarily intoxicated, but he voluntarily engaged in the act that led to the intoxication. Whereas here you have Ms. Spence, who did not voluntarily do the act that led to her intoxication. So the acts that led to her intoxication was apparently somebody put something in her drink at the restaurant, and then as a result of what was done to her at the restaurant, she ingested alcohol, but not voluntarily.
What evidence can you point to that supports your position that something was put into her drink? Was there any evidence on that?
Your Honor, her testimony in front of the trial court was consistent with something having been put into her drink, essentially not blacking out, not remembering what happened over a long period of time, that was consistent with really a date rape drug and how those tend to affect people when they're involuntarily ingested. Plus, there was evidence of another young woman that was at this same party that night who somebody put something in her drug and she wound up in a similar situation. So there is evidence that somebody was at this party that these young women were at putting things in women's drinks. And so that, and then her reactions and what happened to her is consistent with what happens under that drug-induced state.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Swenson.
May it please the court, my name is Ann Swenson and I'm here representing the state of Texas. The elements of DWI are the defendant operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated and then the on or about date alleged in the indictment. Appellant is not contesting that she voluntarily operated the vehicle. The DWI statute does not care how you get intoxicated. They just don't want you to drive while you are intoxicated. So that the idea of the speculation about what may or may not have happened at this private party on New Year's Eve just doesn't enter into any of the you know legal sufficiency where you're looking at all the evidence and to determine whether the elements of the DWI crime were supported by the evidence. Here, there's certainly evidence, and she doesn't contest that she operated the motor vehicle while she was intoxicated on the date in question, so that there's certainly ample evidence to support the conviction in this case. All this testimony about whether there was or wasn't a date rape drug or, you know, there's just absolutely no evidence to support that. You've got medical records from some other person that there's no evidence in there. You've got an affidavit from some friend of the appellant's who says that the other girl thought she might have been subjected to a date rape drug, but that's all there is in that affidavit. There's just simply no evidence to support any sort of you know claim that there was anything other than that she was you know, operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated on the date in question.
Well, I kind of hear your position is sort of strict liability. If you're driving while intoxicated, it doesn't matter how you got intoxicated. If somebody did put something in your Coke and you had nothing alcoholic that whole night, if you went out and had lost your faculties to the point you couldn't pass the sobriety test, you would be guilty of driving while intoxicated, which really means driving while impaired.
Well, the question is that what did you know? Did you feel funny after you drank the Coke? I mean, Texas requires people to engage in some sort of responsibility before they get behind the wheel. If you're not feeling up to driving, then, you know, then I see no problem with requiring the statute to be a strict liability statute. As far as all Texas is trying to do is prevent people from being maimed or killed by drunk drivers.
Ms. Swenson.
Yes, Your Honor.
Language that's quoted in the brief as to what the judge said at the trial level is the court finds that there was an involuntary intoxication in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's a court finding of a summary of the facts. How do we get around the deference we're to give to the finder of facts in a criminal trial to get to a point of where that finding overpowers the idea that because the judge found a guilty verdict, that he overrode those facts?
I believe that there is no deference in a typical sufficiency of the evidence review. State versus Ross, that's cited by appellant, is a motion to suppress case, and there you do give deference to the trial court on factual matters. But on sufficiency of the evidence, appellate courts don't give, they review the evidence and see what elements are or not supported by the evidence presented.
Are you aware of any other authority where there's a statement as to a factual determination of the voluntariness of the conduct of a defendant where it's been discussed in an appellate court in Texas like this?
This case I'm not aware of any other one. We've cited Hunsucker in our brief. I found Nguyen, which was one that came out of the Austin court relatively recently, and that one the judge said that he said, I think you're guilty of something, but I'm not really sure whether it's a lesser or what it is. And they said, the Austin court said, well, that comment doesn't mean anything to us as far as factual sufficiency review. Because the appellant in that case was trying to say, well, you know, that should make it factually insufficient that the trial judge didn't know, you know, what I was really guilty of.
This is directly related to the question of the voluntariness of the act in terms of what was said in the trial court here, not which crime you might have committed, but the voluntariness of the act itself.
But the voluntary act is the operation of the motor vehicle, not the getting drunk. It's operating the motor vehicle while intoxicated. So the voluntary act that we're going to be looking at is the operation of the vehicle.
Well, there's two provisions in the Penal Code that address this matter, just as what we heard from counsel for the appellant a moment ago. And one of those is the premise that if you're not intending and if you're not voluntarily acting in terms of the criminal law, why are we penalizing someone for an act they had no control over if that's what we're doing in our criminal justice process?
I don't believe we've got those facts here. There's no evidence that anybody held the appellant down and forced drinks down her. There's certainly no evidence that she was unconscious. If you look at the tape of the stop that the officer, she's fully engaged in talking to the officer, answering his questions. She's certainly not unconscious at that point. So that I just don't think that we've got any sort of semi-consciousness or certainly no unconsciousness in this case.
Thank you very much.
Unless there are any other questions, we pray for an affirmance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Swenson.
Just briefly, Your Honors, the state's argument, which they have in their brief also, about that it does that becoming intoxicated is not an element of DWI, it's being intoxicated, it's puzzling to me. I'm not quite sure how to respond to it other than to say that the voluntary act requirement of 6.01 applies to DWI cases. Nobody has ever said it doesn't. It clearly does. And if the state's argument is correct, that would be throwing out 6.01 as it applies to DWI cases, which is clearly not the law. This is a unique case in the sense that you have a trial court making a factual finding that would support a not guilty verdict if our view of the law is correct. He apparently accepted the state's view of the law, the argument that was made at the trial court, which is incorrect. So it is a unique situation in that sense. Our position is that this court can render a judgment of acquittal and reverse based upon sufficiency. But like I said before, if because of the uniqueness of it, if the court deems it's appropriate to remand for the trial court to reconsider, that would not be an inappropriate result in this case also. The state is asking the court to simply ignore the factual findings by the trial court, which would be wholly inappropriate in this case, and to ask this court to ignore that and then to make your own findings based upon a cold record when there's a trial judge, heard the testimony, made specific factual findings would be inappropriate, and we would ask the court not to go down that road. And based upon everything in our brief and the arguments we presented, we believe this case should be reversed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Your case is submitted. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. You are dismissed. And if the clerk will now adjourn court.